This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress, back on location. But we're with Laura Costas, and she is a person to reckon with. Her poetry is challenging, invigorating, and new. And Laura's going to show it to you right now with an opening poem.
It's called Ariadne Awakens. It's the title poem from Ariadne Awakens, Instructions for the Labyrinth. Ariadne awakens. She smoothed the creases in the bright blue sky. And when he arrived, there was barely time to clear the space between them of ash, coffee grounds, today's paper, and flammable liquids, scented of anise, of orange. Her dune, his dromedary, their islands with violet horizons. He carved her initials in a cloud.
That's Laura Costas. I've been waiting for a very long time for someone to summarize Ariadne. So will you just tell her who she is in mythological history?
Right. Well, not very many. There's really not very much known about her. She is from the Minoan, Cretan Minoan civilization, pretty much, which is much, much earlier than what a lot of people think of as Greek civilization, which is that peaked at around 400 BC. And the Minoan civilization is like, well, it ended around 1400.
Laura,
BC.
We don't want to know that much.
Oh, okay.
No, that's just way too much for my audience. What did she do?
Talk about that thread. Okay, all right. That red thread. So she is the daughter of King Minos and the half-sister of the Minotaur. Now, the Minotaur was a man-eating half man, half bull creature who was kept in a labyrinth. And Theseus, the Greek Athenian hero, was sent to Crete to absolve the Athenians of a hated debt. They had to send youth to the labyrinth for the Minotaur to eat. So he was sent to save Athens. But actually, she did that by falling in love with Theseus and saying, well, all right, I'm going to help you out. I don't really care about my family or my dysfunctional family or my culture. I'm going to help you out. And she offered to give Theseus the magic thread that would send him through the labyrinth safely, directly to the Minotaur. And in some accounts, she also gives him her sword so that he can slay the Minotaur and also find his way back out by following the thread.
There was a happy ending?
In most accounts, the account that I have followed, there is a happy ending. But Theseus is kind of a bonehead, actually. After she does all that for him, he manages to escape narrowly with her. She goes with him. And he leaves her, he abandons her on the Isle of Naxos.
Oh, now that we're getting to too much information again.
No, it's very important. It's very important because after he abandons her, she is discovered by none other than Dionysus. So we can't
do better than that.
That's right.
So Laura Costas, you have taken this woman who takes a thread and weaves it through the labyrinth to get the hero to save the story. And it is said by Anne Becker, poet and critic, mm-hmm. that there's a connection between you and the thread, that your soul, your body, your connection to the earth is what you're really writing about. So read us some poems and we'll see if this is true.
All right.
Give us two.
Two, all right.
Or three.
Or three. You can have as many as you want. There are 100 of them.
Just set them up. I know. But if you tell us beforehand what it's going to be, then we will be happy.
Okay. This one's called No Confidence. And I was so excited because an elusive friend of mine called and we were to get together. And at the last minute, she canceled. So that gave me this one. No Confidence. We meet at the frontier, You tell yourself to me with signals, a gesture of empty hands. Satisfied, I try to place a cornerstone, but a sudden updraft countermands. Banging back and forth, an uncommitted gate on an indifferent hinge survives the gale. The wire trembles with correspondence between the plane of indistinguishables and the peaks of pinpoint facts. A postal card drifts down to my eager grasp. It reads, "The pleasure of your absence is kindly requested."
That is so Laura.
It is.
There's so much humor and wit and high intuition. You ride on high intuition.
That's all I've got.
Girl, you're not kidding. You let us reach for the grasp and you say just enough and not more. I'm going to teach you to my workshops to show them not to say too much because we get it. We get it. It's that invisible thread, isn't it? That Ariadne thread.
Yes, and, indeed.
How do you describe your work? If someone said, talk about how Laura Costas is so individual, what would you answer to that? What is your personal signature in poetry?
Well, I'm not a trained writer. I don't think I've taken a creative writing class since high school, and I just turned 66. So I'm not a trained writer. I don't know poetry. I don't understand poetry. I don't.
But 66, you're looking good.
Thanks. So I don't really have tools like most writers have tools that they can reach for. So when you said intuition, that's it. That's what I got.
Thank goodness, because you sound like nobody else in the world. Thank heavens they didn't hammer you out of a workshop. That's all I can say. And as an artist, too, you're extremely individual. So if you look up your bio on the internet, it says you have 3 books and you're an artist. And I thought, were you born somewhere, Laura? Did you ever live anywhere? Where were you born?
I was born here in Washington, D.C.
And did you go to school?
I did. I went to college. A liberal arts college in the Midwest. And I'm a second generation Greek American. So the Greek myths were always kind of in my DNA. So it's sort of where I started. I had a beautiful illustrated book, the Dolaire's book of Greek myths as a child. I think it's still in print. It's very beautiful. And I read it and looked at it and looked at it. And, you know, like here, all these many years later, it's still there.
How those books informed us, those magical books informed us and impressed us. Now, in your book, Honest Stories, you illustrate once in a while, every third story or something. Is that your profession, illustration?
It was. I just never... to be honest with you, I never found my niche. I never really found where I belong, because if you don't follow the path that's kind of already there, people tend not to see you.
And we see you, Laura.
Thank you. Now I've figured out how to, you know, like the thread, you know, I figured out where kind of what I'm supposed to be doing.
Well, what you are doing, whatever it is, keep doing it. You are off the path. Thank you for being off the path. We are really tired of poetry that does not glisten, that is not original, that does not sparkle. And you have to be way off the path to do something fresh. So let's hear a couple of poems. Set them up and let us
go. All right. All right.
This is Laura Costas. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're at the Library of Congress in Uno Senso.
Suspense. I have a feeling about time that time is not a line like we've been taught. It could be a circle or a spiral. Or a field, it can go forward or backward. And that's really important in this work, I feel. So here's one kind of about time. called Suspense. Aromas and drops of blood close in and nearly commit the presences of your heavenly body and the one with the face. Averages of days tend to pass. You revolve end over end around a single question. How yes can it get before it turns to no? Statistical probability may cancel the arrow of desire, or it may cause it to loop back, slack to the bow, the feathered notch still seeking to be sought by a singing string.
Mm-hmm. How can it get, let me see, what was that line? How yes can it get before it turns to no? I'm afraid I understand that.
You know, yeah.
I worry about myself, but I do understand that. That is one for the physicists.
Well, or for the Buddhists, you know.
Or for poets. It is the best question. It is the best question. What do you mean by it? I mean, I think I know what I mean by it. What do you think you mean?
Well, extremes tend not to work very well. And so you can pursue something for a while, but if you get too extreme about it, it's going to stop working for you.
Oh.
If you see what I mean, or if you exaggerate too far, or if you push too hard.
Uh-oh, now you tell me. Yeah. This is Laura Costas, and I am Grace Cavalieri, who has exceeding all of the rules here. And Lee Upton, who's a very good poet, says something I think just true about you. She says, well, it's from your introduction. What does it mean to live outside of the imprisoning metrics of ideology? And Lee cites that from your introduction, but that's what you're all about. Whether
that's
it's
right.
Technology or clocks or subways, you're all about stepping aside and looking at that. Tell us more about that.
Right. So I think my whole life I've been trying to step outside of roles. I think all of us have that problem to some extent. We're somebody's daughter, we're someone's employee, we're someone's spouse. We have expectations given to us. We have language given to us. And we don't, when we meet another person, we have race and class and gender and all these things start talking before we even open our mouths, before we even respond to one another in any kind of authentic way. And so my question in the book is how, you know, like if those structures weren't there, how would we talk to one another? What would we say? What would our bodies say? How would we relate to one another?
What poems would we write?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Laura Costas, give us three poems in a row, set them up, and I'm not going to interrupt you, and then we'll really know how you sound.
Okay.
And what book would this be coming from?
Oh, this is all Ariadne.
Oh, but you have two other books.
I have. Would you like something?
Stories.
Yeah.
And your third book?
Fabuli.
And what's the rest of that title?
Tales for an Age of Ambivalence.
Okay, well, let's do a couple from our Ariadne.
Okay.
And then go to Fabuli, because
okay.
I haven't read that one. Honest Stories, I really love.
Oh, thank you. Let's see. Let's do Still Water. I have a friend he's a cosmologist. If you ask him, he's a cosmologist, but he's also a grocery clerk. And I just love how everyday people can think big thoughts and how we don't necessarily need letters after our name or any of that, and how we can expect great things from quote unquote little people. So he wrote a blog some time ago, and some of his language really inspired me. And so some of his language is in here. Still water. I began by collecting pictures of galaxies. I hung them on my walls over my bed, and I let them dream for me. I especially liked the ones that suggested speed. Bent spokes, wheels, forward or reverse, motion is motion. But the better infinity would have been a soft galaxy where tossed beer cans turn to chiming birds and lift from seas of grasses lining my path. A galaxy where thatches and thighs are named like stars and form constellations that people across the ages point to. Ah, but now I am here, where fish lose their heads and leap to the pavement, and daylight rays search already bright rivers of integers for the blank. Start over from the dark.
More, please.
Yes, ma'am. This one's called Taurus. I've been a vegetarian for 40 years, and it came to my attention that I was a little malnourished. And it was suggested that I eat meat or drink bone broth or something like that. And I tried, and I couldn't do it. But as I first tasted the bone broth that I bought to do that, I had a vision. I had a vision of the cows telling me, yes, yes, you should do this. You can do this. And the beauty of that gesture inspired this poem. Taurus. Can I hold you, you from whom I kept a distance of theoretical sundry, you who watched? I can feel you on my lips long after the taste. Is that because you walk, and as you walk, the earth opens as willingly as if an iron blade were being drawn behind? Did the plain brown of your body and I wait for my color to begin to drain? I didn't hear you. Now I see you. You have placed upon your head a crown of flowers. My flesh refills with your oak. You spoke, and now a miracle, a second spring. Frost yields as the velvet power of your patience walks square to the flow, planting my feet into the field of stars along with yours. This one's called Customer Service. And there's a lot of phony sacredness out there and a lot of consumer, it's sort of profane sacredness, if you know what I mean. It's like for sale. So that's what inspired this one, customer service. For your convenience, a mirror has been placed on the ground, bringing down weather using only the finest natural ingredients. Your clouds have been individually wrapped for your protection. Please remove your shoes. The rain that you are now enjoying has been handcrafted by artisans on an imaginary hillside in a village which is about to be crushed. Using the power of nature, you will be fully exculpated. The thoughts you are thinking have been carefully selected. Your most intimate activities are important to us. One of our specially trained representatives will be with you shortly. With this revolutionary technology, you can be seen from outer space. This transaction will be surveilled for quality assurance purposes, and the sky will see you now.
That is from Ariadne Awakens. That book is available everywhere books are sold, and I think you better get it. Because this is the thread that's going to lead you to the middle to find out what's inside of us. I promise you that. And your other book, I actually have not read your new book of poems, Fabulae.
No, actually, Ariadne is the more recent one, and Fabulae came out first. Sorry to interrupt you.
Tell us about that book that I don't know about.
Okay, so I have always really enjoyed fables and fairy tales and folk tales. And obviously, an individual can't write a folktale. But I was interested.
Oh, really?
Well, a folktale is sort of handed down from generations, you know. So individuals don't really, you know, that it's not an individual expression, in other words. But I thought, well, so if we were generating fairy tales today, which of course we are, but what, you know, what would we say? What would they be about? So that's where I started with this one. And it's just so the story of fairy tales and folk tales is so interesting, along with mythology, like the generations that come afterward, like ours, and the generations of, say, the 19th century, they kind of cooked the books. They modified a lot of the traditional European fairy tales, like the first edition of Grimm. Is much different than the last edition of Grimm's. And the 50 years that came in between, you know, the women characters were disempowered and bourgeois values crept in. And it's very interesting to follow the history of stories. For any of your listeners who are interested in that, Jack Zipes is the perfect master of that one. He's written extensively on that topic. So his work was very inspiring for me. So would you like to hear something from that one? Yeah. So we're in trouble now. You know, human beings are in trouble now. The planet is in trouble now. How did we get there? Silent treatment. The city cured the din of our speechlessness with pavement. Endless pavement, upon which to project the images of our animal longings. What relief! And we solved the intolerable rioting spiral of time by smoothing it into a soothing straight line of dots that count us down to happy doom. As for the frightful, stifling roar of our togetherness, we got a bargain. Our various saviors disinvested bite from bark and prophesizing blanks tore the order of the okie-dokie from the jaws of the jostling mob so that we may be free to live quietly as fractions of one another, an arm here, a leg there, and never so alone as in each other's company.
Laura Costas, I would like to spend a lot of time with anyone who sees visions of cows, just for starters.
Yeah,
and
she appeared. She
anyone appeared. Who can put happy doom together as if it is not an oxymoron. So let us hear more. I really like your social commentaries, which become poems, and they don't scare us as much as the news do, but they carry forth more impact than the news, indeed. So take us wherever you want us to go.
All right. Well, I think given the news, why don't we go with disruptive coloration? So women's bodies, we'll just leave it right there. Disruptive coloration. Walk with me, sister. I love you for your mind, he said. Mm-hmm. He spoke to her of his grand project of liberation for all of humankind. He had thought much of this topic and was eager to display the clarity of his position. As they walked together, he adjusted her shackles, the better to see her pretty little foot in its punishing shoe. I'll hold the doors for you, little girl. And you'll get that bikini wax for me, won't you? Mm-hmm. You'll love that. Huh. You know, I really love our conversations, he said, sticking pins in her. She tossed her head. He asked if she was comfortable as he removed the cap from a thick black marker and covered the skin of her entire body with words words, words. She did not reply. He looked away for a moment. Before he looked back, she had turned into a beast. Her slender ankle had turned hairy and stout, the black patent shoe to a strong cloven hoof fashioned for fleet migration, her flinty eye penetrating, indifferent. She stepped effortlessly from her chains and bumped his cheek with her forehead. A drop of bright blood adhered to the tip of her gracefully curved horn. "I won't miss you," she said, and trotted off against a red sky.
You had me at he adjusted her shackles. Oh, Laura, what a poem. What a poem. Do people like that?
Well, I think this book makes people a little more uncomfortable than Ariadne quite often.
I'm glad you read that because, you know, in Honest Stories, it's all about relationships and how you write that. It is, your prose is so different from your poetry. Your prose is, well, it's like a pure ribbon of silk, but it's very declarative, very clear, very crystalline, and you know who's doing what to whom. And then in Ariadne, I really didn't see many poems about relationships, although it's there embedded. And so it sounds like Fabulae has more about relationships.
Well, the relationship between the individual and I think the world we live in, the political and economic system that we live in. I was doing a lot of activism at the time, and I was thinking about capitalism, neoliberalism, communism. I was thinking about really big systems of relationship and how we individuals relate to that, which is another kind of relating, you know.
But the man-woman thing is awesome. That is awesome, and it's eternal. And hasn't it raised its head and horn these days? Yeah. So read us some more. Which do you want to read from?
Let's go with Ariadne, and let's find one that's a relationship.
Well, we have
Civilization. Is that one?
I could throw this book in the air and whatever fell out, I would love. These books are riveting. These poems are just off the block. They are, you know, you say to yourself, oh, finally, I'm not bored. Finally, poetry isn't boring because she takes us into unknown territory and doesn't leave us there. The author stays with us. So stay with us some more, Laura.
Okay, this one's called Love Light. On this side of the window screen, the prevailing wind jetting across the room from fan to fan makes it hard to light the lamp. Out there blooms velvet air. Animals lounge in deep green, long gone gray. Gold drops from fronds pulled down to the damp. Once we've won the race we run to get you in me and me in you, there's no more to do than watch the little fire dance behind the glass till the candle goes out.
Do you collect images all day?
I guess I do. I guess I do. I mean, these things write themselves, honestly. I mean, I'm inspired by the natural world and by the little things that people do and the subtext of everything. I think I'm just so sensitive to, I think I'm hypervigilant, honestly.
And so
Thank you.
Are you a Buddhist?
I'm not anything.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
It's the noticing.
But yeah. You
know, it's the noticing, the Zen kind of every moment has an image in it, which I find in your work. But collecting them, keeping them in your mind is one thing. And then I thought, well, you have to keep jotting them down all day because you just can't be the funnel without an end, that you have to be, I think of Laura as going through the world with a spiral notebook.
Well, I kind of do. I mean, I've always got something to write on close by, and I have spent hours and hours in the car, you know, and just like I have
driving and writing.
Oh my God, doesn't everybody? So, you know, I'll have one image and then I'll think of something else and it's, oh, that's it. And, you know, I'll have the little thing in my glove box and pull over and, you know, scribble. And sometimes these things are given to you, you know, let me see if I can find, here, you want to hear a found poem? This is from Fabuli. I was in a parking lot. I just was passing through the parking lot and I heard a woman who was standing outside the courthouse and she was on her phone and she was like agitated and she had clearly just come out of the courthouse. This is called Tyranny. What did she say? What language did she use out there in the parking lot that beautiful spring morning? She stood at the edge of the full, well-appointed acre of pavement, which serves the municipal court, the bank, and on Sundays, the church, facing down the array of shiny vehicles, none of which was her own. The cold light of day glared at her dark glasses, her burgundy hair, an assertive shade, typically an alibi for mousy brown, and the shiny synthetic of her black downmarket suit. She held her body in an anxious square stance, in defiance of the narrow skirt and the severe heel, and she hung a large black bag outfitted with many metal clasps and appurtenances from the crook of her elbow. Whom did she address as she stabbed a novel's worth of words into the small mobile telephone held to her jaw, tearing off every word as she spoke? With the gestures of one who knows, who definitely knows, she spoke. Shelley, yeah, I told her. I told her I wasn't the first to be wounded. Verbatim.
Verbatim. Oh. Her hair was an alibi. What a portrait. You are a dramatist. And don't talk to me till I see that drama that you're going to write. You are a character portrayer. And for a closing poem, what will you give to us?
What will I give to you? How about the epilogue from Fabuli, which This kind of already happened. This kind of already happened with COVID. I was so surprised when COVID happened, and just in the beginning, before people like Donald Trump set us all against one another, there was a beautiful week or two where the entire world was tuned into itself. I'm sure everybody remembers, you know, like there'd be video from Italy, there'd be video from Asia, from Africa. Everybody was like on their balcony, reaching out, you know, to one another, saying beautiful things like we'll solve this, we'll get along. And then, you know, the forces of social control stepped in and shut us all down. But anyway, so this one is called Anticipation. And what would happen if in an emergency or not in an emergency, we recreated the world that we need, and we didn't listen to the mechanisms of social control that are given to us, the politics, the economics, etc. What if we did it? So this one is called Anticipation. If you stop talking and just look at me, the stock market will crash. Hold your tongue, and colors will clash. And the stripes and solids will fly apart, gravity inoperative. Don't do what comes next. Wait. Unknown spices will infuse our kisses, while behind the gates, bureaucrats fall to spontaneous taxonomic revolutions throughout the vegetable kingdom. Block what occurs. We've seen it all already. The new world starts as a wrinkle of pure telepathy, And as we spread out in all directions, we will find that we've been there all along.
The unmistakable voice of Laura Acostas, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinipet Fund, by Sandy Jackson Cohen, and by the Anne Arundel Council of Arts. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and our engineer is Mike Turpin.